From the backstretch at Saratoga, this is Loose on the Lead with Steve Bick and Seth Merrill. Loose on the Lead is sponsored by Thoroughgraph. Everything you need to win. Visit Thoroughgraph.com. The new Colonial Downs and the Virginia Equine Alliance. Hill and Dale, home of perennial standouts. Curlin, Kitten's Joy, Midnight Luke, and emerging stallions, Violence, Byron, and Army Mule. Visit hillanddalefarms.com for consignments at the 2019 yearling sales. Case Supply, the kitchen and bath professionals across upstate New York. Showrooms in Syracuse, Auburn, and Amsterdam. Make your dream kitchen and bath a reality. Visit casesupplyinc.com. And McMahon of Saratoga, standing breakout stallion central banker. Number one in New York and among the nation's leading young sires. Visit McMahonThoroughbred.com.
Good morning. Welcome to a bittersweet edition of Loose on the Lead. Seth Merrill and Steve Bick, the last, September 1st, hard to believe, September 1st, the last edition of 2019 for Loose on the Lead, live from Saratoga. Steve, good morning.
Good morning. Certainly bittersweet, always when the meet always winds down. And, of course, the broadcast season went really quickly for me. It went like this. I only did maybe four shows. Instead of seven.
Yeah, we missed you there in that interim period. But update people on your health situation.
Oh, thank you so much. I know everybody. Literally, they tune in.
I still get asked. Yeah, I told Tina she should start the Nurse Derby Barbie Twitter feed to update people on your condition.
It continues to improve. Let's just say that this is the strangest. I don't wish this on anybody, but it just. It's so odd, and now there's like a terrarium in my eye that like slowly, or like an aquarium, and when you forget to add water to the goldfish bowl, that's what it's like. And actually, it looks like there's a goldfish floating around in there. It's the craziest thing, but it is getting better, and it's like a barometer dropping, like following the hurricane out in the Atlantic. It's going to be another month before I can really see.
But as you said, when you came in for the first time a couple weeks ago, you said timing works out. You'll be able to get out to the Breeders' Cup and yada yada. So it works out.
I had no point of reference because I've never had anything, any serious thing happen to me. This was odd, and it made the summer. I was able to follow. I mean, I missed maybe that 1 week where I was really laid out like a tuna, like a fillet. But otherwise, I was able to follow along, and it's been a good, from a wagering standpoint, it's been a very good summer. I've said that I don't want to make a declaration that, you know, going forward next summer, you know, I'm only going to cherry pick and only, you know, weekends or whatever. But I will say, between the 2 days off and kind of concentrating on Saturdays, it has made it a little bit easier. I mean, we're in this mentality, we have to handicap every race and we have to have the best percentage of all the handicappers. No, if you're taking the game seriously and, you know, you're playing, you want to cherry pick. You're going to pick your spots. And that actually has been, I think, a fairly valuable sidebar to what went on this summer with this crazy thing with the eye. And focusing in on 6-8 races on the Saturdays, and I've had the Beat Bick contest, and those of you that have been playing, there's about 1,700 qualifiers. You've got today and tomorrow, the last two chances to qualify. Have you played?
I keep forgetting. I have played a couple of times. I'll jump in. Tomorrow also?
Tomorrow also, oh, yeah. Okay, and today's play is Nolo Contesto out at Del Mar in the Del Mar Mile. I kind of opened the door for people yesterday if they found Preservationist, because I took kind of a swing with Mongolian Groom, and I thought that might open the door for people. And today, Nolo Contesto, and that's a very good race in the Del Mar Derby. And then tomorrow, I got to make a decision. There's a lot of interesting racing tomorrow, including down at Parks. where they've got the match series down in Philly, and you've got the Smarty Jones preparing for the Pennsylvania Derby, and a bunch of other good stakes. In fact, we're going to talk to Charlotte Weber in a little bit. Charlotte's involved in the President's Cup, the PTHA President's Cup. She, of course, won the Saranac yesterday for the third time in 9 years. I don't know if you saw my tweet. You see my tweet?
I didn't.
Yeah, you're not watching carefully for my. You're not hanging on my every tweet.
I don't blame you. Occasionally.
Okay. Well, Charlotte's won three times. She's going to join us today. She's got two horses in the La Lorgnette today as well, up at Woodbine. So anyway, the Beat Bic Challenge. Two more chances today and tomorrow, and then we'll have the championship a week from Saturday on the 14th, September 14th. But you got to qualify, and if you pick a horse that wins versus a horse that I picked today, Nolo Contesto today, I'm not sure about tomorrow, you can sign up for the tour for $1, save $49, and then probably 12 races on the 14th for one seat to Las Vegas to represent at the races and Loose on the Lead.
I'm taking my shot.
That would be the best. If you were to qualify, that would be hysterical.
Yeah, no, I'd love to from my visit out there last year.
That's perfect because then they don't have to pay for your trip. They'll love it at Capitol. It's right up Capitol OTB's alley.
Zoom.
They don't have to pay.
I still have to work the thing, though.
You can do it. You're the two-headed monster.
All right, let's talk some stakes action and some news and the meet in general. But we had some sad news over the week that we'll start out with.
Yeah.
And I talked to some people on the front side who certainly remember Randy Romero, and he passed away a couple of days ago, and everybody recognized he'd been in kind of rough shape for a while now.
Randy Romero, it's just a heartbreaking, a life that was just dedicated to the game, and that's a Skip Dickstein capture of his Hall of Fame induction in 2010. It meant so much to him. And in a career that was just marred constantly by not just injuries and challenges, but horrific circumstances. The incident at Oaklawn, where he literally caught on fire in the hot box, making weight. And second and third degree burns over 60% of his body. And he came back from that. Later on, an injury that broke his elbow that was then misset and never healed properly. Just horrific. Very similar, actually, to Rich Migliore's arm injury. It ended up, by the time they fixed it, his right arm was 3 inches shorter than his left. But every time he was confronted with one of those challenges, he kept coming back. And on Thursday, we bookended at the races. If you didn't hear the show live or on Capital OTB replay Friday morning, you should really pull it up, and I'll carve out the conversations that were dedicated to Randy. It started with Shug McGahee, and it ended with Billy Badgett. And of course, the two bookend fillies of his career, Personal Ensign and Go for Wand. Randy Romero, every kind of horse ran for Romero, and we're going to run the 1988 Distaff, which is one of the greatest races in the game's history. Personal Ensign trying to end her career undefeated and seemingly beaten and hopelessly behind at the top of the stretch. And Shug McGahee on Thursday, Seth, was so funny. He told the story about going out on the apron after the race and Romero saying, "Had him never in doubt, boss." And Shug saying, "Well, glad you thought so," because Shug thought there was no way. And obviously, easy to identify Personal Ensign in the Phipps colors. The black jacket, the cherry cap, and Brian, I think if you have the audio, as they approach the top of the stretch, we should just let Tom Durkin bring them home, because it seemed that Winning Colors just had this race, and it it was a matter of just, you know, riding out and finishing. But it didn't turn out that way. Randy Romero is going to begin to rally here. Let's listen to Tom Durkin take it home.
Is putting her run in on the inside now. She takes to the outside. Five lengths off the lead of Winning Colors, who turns for home here at Churchill Downs. Stevens going to a vigorous left-handed whip, holding on by two. Goodbye, Halo is charging hard. Here comes Personal Ensign, unleashing a furious run on the outside, but it is still Winning Colors. Goodbye, Halo. Personal Ensign, a 16th of a mile from the wire. Winning Colors is there. Personal Ensign, a dramatic finish, and here is the wire, and it is Personal Ensign there with Winning Colors in a photo. Very close at the 16th pole. It looked like Personal Ensign was racing here.
What is unbelievable. What is unbelievable about that is at no point in that stretch do you see Romero acting desperate, right? Yeah. A couple of taps, a couple of waves, somehow he knows she's going to get there. And I don't know if you saw the John Mabee last night. Did you see Vasilika?
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. Very, very reminiscent. Oh, my God. She nails. It's astounding how you don't think she could possibly get there, and she does. Very similar to this. But Romero, just so gifted. And I described him on Thursday morning as guileless. He was as sweet a guy. And in the face of these constant challenges, he never at any point ever felt, you know, put upon. It was weighing on him late in his life. You know, the hepatitis that came as a result of the blood transfusion, as a result of the burns. 3 days a week, losing a kidney, being denied by the donor system because he wasn't healthy enough for a kidney. And he just kept smiling and kept fighting. And Randy Romero won't ever be forgotten. And I mean, just from every corner of the industry, two things. Acknowledgement of the kind of person he was and the kind of rider he was, and then almost a sense of relief that these constant challenges, you know, Eddie Donnelly and Pat Day, both, you know, famously jockeys of strong faith, they, you know, were constant sources of support for Randy Romero, and hearts go out to the family, the big extended Romero family down there in Erath, and just a real hero to countless fans and connections and stakeholders in the game.
Yeah, and again, that news came out a couple of days ago, and so unfortunate news there for the game of racing. But of course, Saratoga winding up. And why don't we hit a couple of stakes replays before we go to commercial break? Because we have a couple of stakes replays that'll tie into our guests. But there were four stakes yesterday, so why don't we take a look at the Glens Falls? It's going to be Mississippi for Graham Motion, as it was a Graham Zacta. His Empress of the Nile is going to run second. Mississippi is number five, Empress of the Nile number one. Santa Monica was the 8-5 favorite for Chad. That one will run third. Fool's Gold, the other Chad that had won the stakes race previously, winds up fifth in here. But again, Graham's European shipper, Mississippi, gets it done in the first start in the United States.
This was impressive.
Yeah.
This was impressive. And to quote Nina Simone, Mississippi goddamn. hell of a performance. And first North America, sometimes it takes them a visit and, a start or two. Anxious to talk to Graham tomorrow. Graham, by the way, also a winner down at Colonial. He won the Virginia Derby yesterday with English B for Calumet. Another win for
and,
having a good season.
We had Jeff Blum on last week and talked a little Snapper Sinclair. He won over at
Kentucky Downs.
Yeah.
Yes, that was in the tourist mile. The tourist mile. The 300 three-quarter of a million dollar tourist mile. Yeah.
Prioress a little bit earlier on the card. Obviously, all eyes on Break Even. Break Even, the number three horse, kind of lives up to her hype early and takes the lead and looks pretty good into the stretch, but gets run down late by the Chad Brown trainee, number five, Royal Charlotte, who was eligible to rebound off a test effort that clearly was an aberration behind Covfefe, and she does. Royal Charlotte, number five, wins over number three, Break Even.
This was a good effort by both. There's not a lot to say. I mean, Break Even did feel a little, vulnerable. I don't want to say that they've taken the path of lesser resistance, but I mean, those were the two horses. I'll tell you what was surprising was that the Chad Brown horses get bet as a matter of course, and yet for some reason there was not. What was she? Nine to two, right?
Yeah. Oh, paid $10 even.
Yeah, there you go. 4-1. I was surprised. That was, a lot of times we look at that and say, oh, she's a little dead on the board. But it seemed like those were the only two you wanted to use.
Yeah, she got it done there. Again, rebounding off of the test. Before we go to break, Jose Ortiz, six over his brother in the jockey race. Jose Ortiz, 57 wins. Irod, 51. Chad clearly going to take the trainer title. He's at 41. Todd Pletcher at 18. And they gave the trophy yesterday to Seth Klarman as the leading owner. Mike Dove had a good meet, too, but Seth Klarman steps to the forefront with Klarovich at the meet. So they're your human leaders as well.
Very nice.
Oh, we should also toss out, because I said we'll mention it when Jimmy gets here, because we'll have Jimmy Jerkins later. But I said during the handicappers report, we were trying to come up with the buyer, and I was checking, but you had the buyer in the woodwork.
106,
which is solid, clearly.
Yeah.
All right, head to a break. Break? Yes?
Yeah. Mrs. We'll Weber, Charlotte Weber, joining us. And I think the last time Charlotte was on the show with us was when To Honor and Serve won the woodwork.
Oh, there you go.
Right? Yeah. I'm almost positive that was the, or it might have been, it couldn't have been when World Approval won.
Oh, well, that's possible.
I don't think so, because it was after, because that was on Labor Day. Wasn't that closing either
I think
Labor
right.
Day or closing Sunday?
Yeah, I think you're right.
I'm pretty sure it was when Tonner and Serve won the Woodward, but Mrs. Weber, a winner for the third time in 9 years of the Saranac, Brilliant Speed and World Approval.
There you go. All right.
Back after this.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
You like free money? Well, Capital OTB gives its players plenty of opportunities to cash in. At Capital OTB, there are so many ways for horse players to receive bonus dollars by simply participating in promotions such as our bankrolls, bounty bets, online handicapping contest, and much, much more. Plus, with Capital OTB's player rewards program, you get actual cash back. So what are you waiting for? Log on today at CapitalOTB.com or CapitalOTBBet.com and claim your free money.
We're back on Loose on the Lead, the last Sunday of the Saratoga season. And Charlotte Weber joins us from Live Oak. And I think, Charlotte, as we were taking the break, I think the last time we were together here on the show was when you won your Woodward with To Honor and Serve.
I think so. Absolutely.
Great to have you here. And
you've been absent this summer.
Yes, I know. It's funny. You get so used to being here, and you come every summer. When did you start coming here?
Oh, my goodness. I think in about 1967.
Wow.
That's a long time.
Wow.
And then I kind of had a hiatus and left a little while because they wouldn't give me a box at Naira, which I didn't think was very friendly.
They didn't give you a box?
They didn't give me a box. So I went off to Monmouth. And then I returned and I got a box.
That's great. Well, and you've had a box ever since. And, of course, the familiar table at Belmont in the corner up in the trustees room. You keep winning Saranacs and other big stakes, of course. The four-star Dave with World Approval. World Approval won the Saranac as well. And Brilliant Speed, your third in 9 years, yesterday with Mike Trombetta and Global Access.
Very exciting. Very exciting. He's a very honest horse, and I'm looking forward to a really fun going forward with him.
And, you know, it's been a good meet. We'll talk about Tap It to Win in a minute, who's you got to be over the moon about. But, you know, here was a shortish field. You had to be, you know, concerned with the 3-5 Klarovich favorite, but he was terrific in here and certainly, you know, ridden in a way that the confidence was evident. I that's what impressed me was how... You know, how much Johnny expected to get there.
Johnny's the best. What can I tell you? You know, Johnny is a true campaigner. He knows the horses. He knows the timing. He has a real clock in his head. And he's as good as it gets.
He's had a terrific second half of the meet. I mean, the last 3 weeks has really come alive. But you've had off and on, you've had extended periods of success. And, you know, whether it was that period when you had the BMW,
mm-hmm.
right? Bailey Mott Weber, you had,
right.
You know, you've had, you know, concentrations of success. You've got the majority of really all the horses these days with Mike and with Mark Cassie. Talk about how your program has evolved over the years.
Well, a lot of trainers keeps you very busy, and I'm not sure that's the best way to run the stable. But right now, I'm really satisfied. I have two very honest, wonderful men who really like racing and like the sport and support the sport. So I'm very happy. Also, I'm happy that they're both seem to be very good at sending my horses out to different tracks and not getting locked in. I would have liked to have run more races here in Saratoga. It didn't happen that way. There was a little place down in Kentucky where it seems like my babies were running.
At Ellis. Yeah, it's all right.
And everybody's saying, you know, I'll wait, watch what happens to Ellis. But I'm in New York. I want to be in New York.
You want to see him run.
I want to see him run. And I'm not going to go to Ellis Park with everybody else.
Well, and Woodbine. Woodbine,
I have a very... very strong group of horses there. I think the best thing about both Mark and Mike is they take what I give them, and I give them a lot of homebreds, and because that's who I am. I like to breed to race, and so, you know, it's not always having to go to the sale to buy the fanciest thing in the market. So
you're not afraid to do that, though?
No, I'm not afraid. I think the market is good. It's certainly good and strong. I'm not sure how realistic it is.
That's a fair assessment. And you know, I brought up Tap It to Win, who of course last weekend was as impressive a 2-year-old, Charlotte, as we've seen at Saratoga this summer. Especially
given against the bias,
running against the bias. Seth's got it right on the money. Because, and even if the track was better inside early in the day, for him to run an 86 buyer on a track that we know the inside was not the place to be. Do we have video of Tappet? Here he is. What are your thoughts? There he is down on the rail.
I stay on the rail. I mean, if you looked at your statistics, which I know you have more than I do, I'm number one all the time. So I now sort of turn that into a positive, saying, I'm number one. So I don't mind the one hole. And he certainly didn't mind it either.
This is an exciting horse on a number of levels. And I certainly wanted to talk about the home breeding program. I referred to World Approval earlier. And you know, that's one of the most remarkable broodmare stories, not just for your operation, but really in recent breeding history.
She's a phenomenal.
Win approval.
Yes. She needs to be in the Hall of Fame. I need you to nominate her.
Do they have a broodmare?
Yeah,
a broodmare
sure.
section?
Oh, yeah.
The matriarchs, they do.
Well, Hall of Fame. I think she's right up there and deserving.
What's impressive about her is she herself, you know, was nicely bred. However, Negotiator, who you also bred, the dam, she was nothing special.
Well, she went back to the DuPont family, so that's special.
So I mean, as a female family,
yeah, right.
There was some strength there.
Right.
On the racetrack herself, she was a modest success.
Right.
What's amazing about what you did from that point, when Negotiator got win approval, the series of stallions you used with her to get Za approval, World Approval, Mies approval, to get two Breeders' Cup winners and $4 million earners.
That's right.
It's astounding. And that was with Distant View, Miesque's Son, well, Go Sapper, and Northern Affleet.
Well, sometimes you don't have to breed to the best to get the best.
There you go. Well, she was. When did you realize?
Little Outcross.
Well, and I was going to say, do you have a preference on that front?
No, I really, I have a team of professionals, and we all look at it, and we go over the breeding and the stats, but I don't think that I'm the guru of that. I don't know it. I know there are a lot of people that take a lot of pride in saying they think they know the magic. I don't think we know the magic. Somebody told me years ago when I first bought Typhoon, actually, that, oh, this is how you have to breed her, and then we went back and we're going to breed her back to that stallion. And I said, I didn't think that was the nicest looking foal. And he said, boy, are your kids all the same? Well, that's the truth. The kids aren't all the same.
There was Jimmy Carter, and then there was Billy Carter. One was president, one wasn't.
Yeah, right. Maybe neither of them should have.
Let me hit on Tappet to Win. And have you talked with Mark, and do you have any plans? What's up next for Tappet to Win?
I think we're just trying to keep our hands close to our chest at this point. I mean, they're the obvious, the Champagne, and then the big race in Kentucky, and we're thinking about how he's doing, and I'm not saying that in any reason to have anybody think he's not doing beautifully. He is. But, you know, these horses, you know, they wink at you wrong and you have a terrible time. So we're going to take it one step at a time. I think we're sort of leaning to go to run in Kentucky next because of the two turns if we do go out to California.
And again, that was a homebred Tappet to Win.
I would like Mark to win a win in your inn. That would be really nice.
Sure. Good point. Yeah.
I never get that. I always keep adding to their kitty.
Is a homebred, though, and debuted actually up at Woodbine in the first start, ran second there, then came to Saratoga and got the nice one we just saw. But as a homebred, tell people what happens, how the horse gets from being born at Live Oak Stud, then makes it to the racetrack. What's the transition? Where does the horse go in the meantime?
Well, we have them at home, and we raise them as weanlings. We wean them and then let them grow up, and I believe in keeping them outside a lot and getting the muscle they can get. But, I mean, they're all sort of treated the same. Nobody is individualized, and then we take them to the training session, and they go over to the training barn and August, right when the other horses come up here, and go through the paces with them and then give them a break. And individually, it's really the individuality of the, each of these horses. If I'm told we're going to slow down on this horse or stop on this horse, we do. I try to listen to the animal.
And since we're talking Tap It to Win, and you mentioned about winking, famously, his dam, 1.3 carats, a $1.3 million yearling purchase. You know, she was okay. She didn't necessarily fully live up to the hopes.
Not to 1.3 carats.
No, not to that level. But she's got two very, very nice horses, because the older brother, the three-year-old, who you've taken your time with and is now suddenly is starting to put it all together,
super smart. Super smart? No.
No, it's super...
Stonehenge?
Yes, yeah, good job. Super
good
Stonehenge.
Job.
Well
Very
done. Thank you, Seth. Super Stonehenge. So she's thrown two
She has, and she's going to pay me back on that.
Exactly.
So, you know, but that's patience. That's what it takes in this game. And I think the game... You know, I wish more people had the patience. I think the big deal now is everybody wants to jump in and get rich quick and have partnerships. And I don't think there's so much good for our industry, and we report so much bad. But I think there's patience is one of the things we need.
Well, and Jimmy Jerkins is joining us next, and of course Centennial, and what they did with this Preservationist, you know, a six-year-old, and they kept waiting and waiting and waiting.
That may be more patient than I am.
Well, and you know, you talk about having a game plan and an approach, and you said to me years ago, we were discussing, you know, taking money off the table, as they say. And you said that no matter how much, you know, how much resource any stakeholder has in the game, you can't just hemorrhage money year after year after year. You have to make a stallion, and when a stallion comes along, you have to take that money and you know,
put it back.
Justify everything you're putting into the game. I mean, without being nosy. I mean, how much do you spend on the sport a year, if you were willing to say?
I don't think I'm willing to say, but I do try to really regulate what I spend. I don't think this year I'm going to go to buy any yearlings. It's just a way. I don't need any. I have a nice bunch of babies at home. So I don't need to buy more horses, and I'm going to save some powder and put some new blood into maybe trying to pick up a nice mare. I always tell my people that I'll buy anything. I mean, a weanling, a mare, a yearling, because you never know where you're going to get them.
How big is the broodmare band these days?
I try to keep it at 30, but I sort of slip it over to closer to 40. But I am selling a lot of horses.
Well, and we see, you know, even you know, Daisy Phipps this week, you know, there was the ad that shows that the Phipps operation, they are selling all of their male yearlings.
They've been doing that for years,
and more quietly than this. I mean, with a kind of a flashy, mm-hmm. And they've culled some mares, but it you know, it's part of the, you know, it's part of the operation. It's how you have to.
Well, I try to really cull some mares. I don't want to say cull them. I really want to rotate some of the mares out of the broodmare band so that I can bring some new blood into the broodmare band. And I also like to try to get rid of them when they're young enough so that somebody else will have an opportunity to get a few colt foals out of them. So
we actually, Sid Fernando and I on Wednesday, we were talking about this whole element. And I always credit you as because you weren't worried about necessarily the fashionable the physical side, because you weren't on the commercial end, and you know King Mambo and Dynaformer were your go-tos, and are virtually throughout.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, they really treated me well. And, I mean, you know, after the race yesterday, they were saying, well, what do you think about the breeding of Global Access Giant Causeway? And I said, what can you say? I mean, he is what he is. You know, I got it. I caught it. Let's hope it lasts.
Well, you know, you look at the list of the most successful runners in the stables history, and, you know, a lot of it is modern just because of the size of purses these days. But, you know, between World Approval, Mies Approval, To Honor and Serve, Revved Up, Za Approval, My Typhoon, Awesome Slew, Brilliant Speed, I Fly, you know, the vast majority are homebreds, and that's been your...
That's what's fun.
Exactly. Well,
I'd love to go before we let you go. You talked about being at Saratoga now for a while, and you were here from a time where it was much, much different as far as crowd sizes and whatnot, so you've seen the transition to what we see now with the big crowds and the town being into it and all the local media. Talk about the changes at Saratoga, for better or worse, since the time you've been coming here.
I think the town's doing fine. I've loved the two dark days because it really gives a lot of the racing families time to go home or to catch their breath or to go downstate and look at their horses. And it may give me opportunities to go visit a grandkid for a day or two and get out. So I think the two dark days is good. I think the length of the races is the worst. I mean, to be there from race one to race 11 is, it's just not sustainable. And, I mean, I like racing, and I have fun doing it, and I gamble, but I don't gamble big. But I can't imagine people have enough money to do that. I mean, even if you're brilliant, you're going to run out of cash.
That's true.
And it's just too long. And I think that's unfortunate because I think that hurts the downtown restaurants and things like that. The crowd appeal, I think, is great. I mean, I think that's wonderful to have a lot of young people coming into the business. I mean, it is a wonderful sport. We don't hear a lot of wonderful things about it. I mean, I wish people would really advertise how well these horses are cared for, how many people care for them, how we care for the people that care for them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an industry. We get a lot of bum raps.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. You know, speaking of doing some betting and people we care for, Charlotte, before we wrap up, I've got to show a picture or two that I asked Brian to put up. Because for so long, when you weren't at the racetrack, and Dr. Bisgen could be in the back, he would make a bet for you, and then if a horse would win, if a Live Oak horse would win and you weren't at the track, Alex would go down to the winner's circle and always wave and salute. And we wanted to salute Alex and Marianne, who couldn't be here this summer with Alex ailing. And
yes, but he's still betting for me, Steve.
Absolutely, absolutely is. And we miss them terribly this summer, and they're hoping for the best.
It's a transition. Very sad. Very sad to lose Marianne Lou too.
Absolutely. It's been, from that front, it's been, well, and certainly you talked about last week, Carmen.
Barrera, that was awful.
You must have known Carmen her whole life, basically.
I did. Wonderful woman. Wonderful lady. Absolutely. So it's very sad. I think I'm in the older generation now.
Well, not based on your activity and everything that's going on. You send out our little jewel today with Luis Saez. That's in the 7th, and that's a good maiden group. You've got on Monday in the Bernard Baruch, March to the Arch comes back for a third time in the meet in the stake to close things out the season. You're running in the Dabunda Cup down at Philadelphia with Super Striking, and you got two in the La Lorgnette today at Woodbine.
I know. Busy. Good thing we have cell phones.
You can watch and bet. Charlotte, thank you so much. Charlotte Weber, best of luck always.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Good luck going forward.
Thank you.
All right, we'll head to a break. Jimmy Jerkins is in the house. Preservationist, big win yesterday in the Woodward. We'll We'll talk that and more. Stay tuned.
Recent study of some of the top online wagering sites, Capital OTB won big in total player rewards, far surpassing some of the best-known wagering sites in America. While other rewards programs simply offer you points redeemable for gift cards, Capital OTB's rebates are paid to you in actual cash. Plus, Capital OTB gives you full and immediate access to your money. So if all you're getting now are points and gift cards, join Capital OTB Player Rewards today and get cash back. Visit CapitalOTBBet.com and sign up today.
Welcome back to Loose on the Lead. Closing Sunday here at Saratoga. Seth Merrow and Steve Bick. And closing Sunday means the day after the last Saturday of the meet. The highlight always the Woodward. And yesterday's Woodward won by Preservationist, trained by Jimmy Jerkins. We have Jimmy in this morning. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
And congratulations.
Thanks. That was a sweet win.
Yeah, it was a very nice win. Why don't we start right off, pull it up, and take a look. We have the race here. The Woodward Preservationist is going to be the number 5 horse. Running second will be number 2, Bal Harbor. Running third will be Yoshida. Tom's Detat runs fourth. Take us through and your thoughts of the race and the stretch run as we get to that point. Boy, that was a nice ding-dong duel. Chart margin of a half a length. We talked earlier, 106 buyer. But again, as they kind of proceed around the track, what were your thoughts for Preservationist?
I liked where he was right from the get-go, and especially when he tucked in behind them horses, I thought was good, you know. And when he gets out in the clear a little too early, he'll probably tug on the jock and get a little rank, you know, here. Here he's got no choice but to see. He's looking to tug on him a little bit here, and he gets him back in a nice way, without getting into his mouth too much. I always thought Junior was a little better than the average jock at settling horses early. That's one of his key strengths, I think.
Yeah, typically shows some early speed, and he's either out there or he's up in the mix, and that was the game plan, obviously, yesterday, or that was the way it played out yesterday. But as you're watching this, was this kind of the game plan unfolding the way you wanted it to play out?
Yeah, well, outside of Mr. Buff, it didn't look like there was a whole lot of speed in the race. It looked like everybody had the same kind of speed. Our horse a little better, I think, but if we really wanted to be that close after what happened last time, we just decided, let's hope he breaks cleanly and some will go and you can tuck in, you know, and that happened. And he's one of those horses that doesn't mind being down in there. He's eager, he's getting hit with dirt and it doesn't seem to be bothering him. Right here, I thought that was, he didn't have a place to go right there. No one, they're not gonna, grade one race, they're not gonna give you the usher treatment, as my father used to call the usher treatment. Come on through. Yeah, he used to knock a jock. They said, "Here, come on." He used to call. They gave him the usher treatment. But here, this was really something. He got through there, and you know, I was pretty confident he had enough horse to get it done.
Two or three things out of that. I hadn't noticed until this replay. He's strictly hand riding him too.
He didn't have any room to
really work the stick.
Yeah, he probably wanted to get it over into his left hand because he has a tendency to lug it anyway, and and he just didn't really have the opportunity. But
also, Jimmy, you mentioned about what happened last time, and you had been on the fence coming out of the Suburban about running at all in the Whitney,
yeah.
And then you went ahead. Were there any regrets, or was there was it just one that you just turned the page?
Yeah, we pretty much turned the page. I mean, he wasn't, you know, a lot of things go into it. He was a six-year-old, and he looked like, you know, who knows, you know, if he's going to run after this year. I don't know. That's not for me to say, but... Those races are so prestigious. If we were to get lucky in it, you know, it's such icing. Yeah, yeah, I mean, and I thought he was doing well. As it turned out, on race day, he got a little more upset than I would have liked. He was pretty riled up in the post parade, and we worked on that since then. He like they do up to some stallions get very, they tend to get more studdish up here for some reason. The stable area is a little more open, it's a little more congested. They're able to spot the fillies a lot easier, and they get distracted, and we had to do some moving around. we had to move the, especially one in particular that was driving them insane. We had to send her to the other into another barn. As soon as we did that, he seemed to get a little more paying attention to what was important to us, and and he did, you know, from that, and then his works were all good. I mean, he's a good willing workhorse, and you know, I didn't closer we got to the race, I couldn't really think of any reason to skip it.
I think we have took a couple of pictures out on the track. Don Little congratulating you after the race, and the winner's circle photo as well. And you mentioned it, he's a six-year-old. That was only the 10th career start. Just talk a little bit about the path you've taken and having an owner like Don Little and Centennial that were willing to take the time with the horse.
Yeah, well, that was key, you know. I'm getting a lot of credit for being patient, but as was their patience, they had more patience than I had, you know. But you know, it's just this great feeling that it took very long time. It was very frustrating because we knew he had the talent to do anything, but he just had so many little nagging things over the years that we had to send him home. But this last go round was not, I don't know why, just everything came together and we were able to keep him going, get some continuity into his racing, and you know, not having races every race 3 months apart, you know, and I knew if we were able to do that, he could prove what he was capable of.
Jimmy, I do want to ask about his work pattern and when you choose to have an extended timed work, because he worked a full three quarters coming into this. Other times it seemed like you've tried to sharpen him up at certain times for races. Explain your approach, and I mean obviously, you know, the horses are individuals, but what's your general approach and how has it worked with him?
Well, he tends to be a horse that gets heavy between races if he doesn't have enough if he doesn't have enough work, and that's what happened after the Whitney. Once we decided we had to breeze him a little slow half, I think it was 2 weeks after, and then when we decided to, I said I really want to take dead aim at the Woodward as opposed to going to the waiting for the Gold Cup, and I got a little nervous because he looked like he got very heavy, like all of a sudden, just looking at him, he goes, wow, and I said, we better get busy, you know, so we got him, you know, we got busy with him and worked him, he worked beautiful, that 13... He went out 7/8 and I think 27 flat on the Oklahoma track, which is, you know, they say Oklahoma track is nowhere near as slow as it used to be. Years ago, if a horse could never, the Seattle Slough and Secretariat combined couldn't go 7/8 and 27 on the old Oklahoma track. But this particular day, it was not fast, and it turned out to be a really, really good work. And then he bounced, you know, he came out of it in great shape, and you know, which the classy ones do. So, you know, we felt good after his work pattern.
you make me think, you know, that the one it, we worked in 113 and one for three quarters and probably galloped out, you know, probably a mile. He probably double gallop out.
Yeah.
You know that story about with your father about, I forget who he shipped. It might have been Proveout, actually, that who was his Woodward winner.
Yeah.
But he shipped somebody to Hawthorne for the Hawthorne Gold Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, on Tuesday or Wednesday.
Yeah. I don't know. He worked him.
He worked a mile and an eighth.
That was, you know, that was Bo Purple. That was
Bo Purple.
That
was, there
you go. Yeah, he worked his training. If you ever saw his, if you ever heard about his training, it would, a horse nowadays could never survive the training he went through. It's just that's how different horses were and how racing was. You know, you just it just evolved. You know, it's not the breed got a lot finer in the subsequent years, and of course you get the occasional one that needs more than the average, like Preservationist. You know, every once in a while you get ones that just require more to stay in shape. You know, you just got to determine it and figure it out. You know, observe them every day. It's the only way to do it.
The companion, the back end of that story is that, you know, he had not gone, your dad had not gone to Chicago yet, and the horse was there. He worked a mile and an eighth in preparation for the mile and a quarter race, 5 or 6 days out, and your dad got a call from a journalist in Chicago and said, you know, do you have any comment about Bo Purple's work? And he said, why? He said, well, he broke the track record going a mile and an eighth, and the race is Saturday.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think he worked a mile and an eighth in 1:48 or something. Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy. And then ran a mile and a quarter on Saturday.
Yeah, yeah, I know. That's the way things were done. You know, it was different days, no question.
Too funny. Well,
if we're doing reminiscing, I want you to tell the story again because I've heard it before. Watching Onion with the upset, and you're on the backstretch, and the tote ward got in your way.
Yeah, well, you would. It was about like the 3/16th pole. They'd disappear behind the tote ward if you were watching it from the backstretch, and he was a half a length in front, and the crowd's going wild, and you know, but. He was running against Secretary. We just knew by the time. And then once he emerged from behind the tote board, there was about maybe 70 yards to before the wire. So me and my brother Steve, and we were sitting there watching. We just knew when he emerged from the other side of the tote board, Secretary was going to be at least 3 or 4 in front. And when they emerged out of it, and he still had the same half a length on him, we just couldn't believe it. And of course, he took that to the wire. But it was just, that was just fantasy that day.
Jimmy, you now sit with a perfect situation. You got plenty of time before you have to go out to California. What's the plan with him between now and Breeders' Cup?
I don't know. I really don't know whether we just go right there or don't go there or run in the Gold Cup and don't worry about, I mean... That I'm sure what closer we get to the Breeders' Cup, everybody's going to get itchy for the Breeders' Cup. But, you know, the fact that it's out in California again, that means something. I wish it was in New York or even in Kentucky, but it's, you know, that trek out to California seems to be tough to do. But, like I said, but that is ultimately what I'm sure everybody's looking at, but the best way to get there, I don't know yet.
Well, and of course, I'm just thinking back to, what was it, FNX? When you was it FNX you went out and won the big cap?
No, he
what was that?
Shaman Ghost won the
Shaman Ghost, okay.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Well, and actually, a decent segue, we got to talk about the two-year-old, because you may have two horses to run in the Breeders' Cup. I wanted to ask you about what has been a big part of the recent success, because you had a handful of horses between FNX and Shaman Ghost and Holy Helena that you took over their training, you know, well into their careers, and you even were able, I mean, they were all solid, nice stake horses coming to you, but you managed to really take them to another level and have also been able to sustain, you know, you had a sustained success with them.
Well, it's a lot of luck, and just they were, like you say, they were good horses to start with. You know, we got Charm and Ghost, you know, Brian did terrific with him. He was forced to run him very hard as a 3-year-old to do the whole Canadian
That's
deal
right.
to get the Canadian Triple Crown. You know, and as a result of that, he got, I think he just got beaten one of them. But as a result of that, you know, the wear and tear on him, he had to be sent home. And, you know, I got a real good classy horse after he had a good rest. You know, that's the time you want to get him. You know, and FNX was almost the same deal. He was, you know, the fella that owned him, Russell, was, he had a practice, or his family owned him, but he was the manager. He had to, had to shuffle him between trainers and stuff like that, and, you know, that horse can't thrive in that kind of situation. So when opportunity got to get him in the barn, you know, I always knew he had some class, and I didn't think he'd do what he ended up doing. I can't say that, but I always knew, I loved Mineshaft, and he had a great female family. He was a beautiful horse, and he won going long. And I always thought he had won going long in the winter when I didn't think he couldn't have been quite prepared, you know, ready for it, and he won anyway. And, you know, only classy horses do that.
Well, and Holy Helena, who's up mm-hmm. at Woodbine, right? She's
yeah.
continuing to what she's shooting for.
She's running in a race. The decision was made to leave her up there for two races to see if she could get a Grade One win. There's a race called the E.P. Taylor,
sure.
And the thought was she seems to really do good up in Woodbine training on the poly track, and. It just seems like she seems to handle it. It's a little more forgiving than
sure.
you know, the tracks in New York, and you can only train on the turf so much. So, but she has absolutely no problem with the poly track. So, she's supposed to run on. I can't remember. There's a stake on the 14th up there that she's going to run, and then run back in the
in October on that big day on the international and the there's three the New York there's a
right.
There's the grade ones. Mm-hmm. She worked in 111.3 yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I said, Mike, what are you doing? You know,
she's with Mike Doyle up there, right?
Yeah, but you know, we talk back and forth about her works, but you know, I said, you know, she doesn't quite need. Even though she hasn't, her races are spaced out, she doesn't need quite as much. You know, she can do well on training, not quite as hard as you think she might. He said, "Yeah, I agree." And then he calls up and says, "You won't believe what happened. She went to course in 11."
I
said, well,
that's okay. I looked it up this morning. I was like, "Oh, right. She worked yesterday." I'm like, "Oh my god!"
But that's fine though. If she felt like she did it. Sounded like she did it well within herself. So. You know, and she's an old class mare, and I've seen pictures of her, and he sends videos of her all the time. She's holding her weight terrific, and she's just, seems like she's just doing great.
Well, you're doing great, and it's been a terrific summer. You win yourself a Woodward, your second, and of course, Shaman Ghost won your first,
mm-hmm.
and then on Monday, tomorrow, let's get into Green Light Go and the opportunity to have this hard-spun colt go 3-for-3. And when was the last? I'm trying to think. When was the last time you had a horse in the hopeful?
I never ran one.
You never ran one in the hopeful. There you go.
No.
Let's look at the Saratoga Special while we talk. Going back to August 10th, Green Light Go is going to be the number 3 horse here to make it 2-for-2 in the career with the Maiden Breaker down at Belmont and then the Saratoga Special mm-hmm. under the belt. What was your takeaway from this race?
Yeah, well, I thought he dropped over and bumped that horse a little bit, but I said to Junior, I said, what happened there? He said, well, I wanted to come over on him a little and try to intimidate him to make sure he wasn't going to come back on us. He said, but he kind of overreacted a little bit to it. But then once he straightened the way, yeah, I didn't realize he won that easy. I didn't realize he was easing him up like that. But, yeah, he really seems like he's something special, and he seems like he's done great since the race. You know, we were toying with the idea of skipping it and running in the champagne, but you know, all those things look good in theory when you're sitting there. But you know, when you're at the barn every day and It's nerve-wracking to have a horse like that and to sit on him for that long. It just, you just feel like you're just waiting for something to happen. And I just couldn't, as long as he was doing well, you know. Of course, I went back and Frank Stronach, and they're big believers in spacing the races out. So I knew it might take some doing, but he was all, you know, when I explained to him that I really want to do it, I think it's a natural progression in distance. I think there's enough time between, I think 3 weeks or it's like maybe one day over 3 weeks, I don't know. But a big, strong, strapping colt like him, I can't see it. I'd be surprised if it backfired on us, as long as he was sound, which, you know, knock on wood, he is, and his work the other day was really good, well within himself. So I didn't see any reason not to give it a shot.
Well, and if we're going to use the pattern, the 46-1 bullet leading into the special, and now a 47 flat bullet leading into this race, kind of signaling readiness.
Yeah, you know, and you always look for, especially with 2-year-olds, you're always looking for them getting nervous, which they'll do if they'll do when they're getting too much, when they're overdone a lot sooner than, and they'll show it a lot sooner than an older horse will. And we gave him a good test, you know, we took him to the paddock a couple of times and he handled it great. Stood him in the starting gate. I even took him over here to stood him in the gate over here where he'll be breaking from when he runs in the hopeful instead of going over in Oklahoma. I thought that would get him riled up thinking he was running, but he was alert, but I was really thrilled with how he behaved in there. So, you know, I hear the weather isn't going to be too good. We might have a muddy track, but
it's not going to bother Hartsbun.
You shouldn't.
Or pleasantly perfect.
You wouldn't think,
nope.
You know. So.
Nope.
And he's got a good, looks like he's got a good economical motion to him, so should get over it, should skim over the top of it.
Jimmy Jerkins, famous trainer of 2-year-olds. I love it. And well, you know, tomorrow, of course, the distribution of the Empire, provided it doesn't get hit today, it'll still be distributed tomorrow because it's a closing day, but the Empire 6 also includes the 8th race. And I got to ask you, Phil Bursch, we're big fans of, and he's got his homebred, and Shelly Ann. Kind of a disastrous last time we saw her in March. What went on there?
Yeah, I couldn't tell you. I just got back from Florida that day, and, I don't know what happened. She just, track was super, super slow, and she might not have cared for it. She just might have struggled and just her wind shut down and she just gave up the ghost, you know. So she's had plenty of time to recover and sent to his beautiful farm up here right outside of Boston Spa. And, you know, she's... my wife Shirley's been getting on her and doing a great job with her. She gallops her and rides her all over the place. She breezed her a couple of times. She didn't breeze her the last two times. I wanted to put, you know, to have a little sharper work into her, so we put the exercise right. Yeah.
Is that the farm right on Route 67?
Yeah.
Amsterdam?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I've probably seen the horse. I've probably lived at the horse.
That's it.
And, of course, Phil Bursch, for those that are regular Broadway goers, does Phil get you tickets?
He's been very good. Yep. Matter of fact, every time Shelly Ann wins, Shelly's got 4 free tickets. So
Phil Bursch, the publisher of Playbill, the program.
Yeah, not Playboy, Playbill.
Playbill on Broadway, and Phil, he's due for another good horse.
Yeah, yeah. She's a half sister to. What's the name of the horse he had that... He just got beat in nose in the Wood Memorial.
The New York bred that
right.
went... That
George
went,
Weaver had.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
The game is the Tensendor.
Tensendor. Yeah. Absolutely. Went to Derby and didn't go well Derby Day, but...
This mare has been... She's been good. She's been... I think he sold... Linda Rice trained a real nice filly out of this mare. I can't remember her name. She was black, but this mare's been good. She's been a good producer.
Well, you've been producing and going to look to finish up the meet on a very high note, winning the Woodward on Saturday and potentially taking home a hopeful tomorrow.
Well, just how Steve's got running three at us, and they all look like they're all good, so we better have our running shoes on, that's for sure.
Steve Asmussen with Shoplifted and Godzilla, the first out winner, and then Basin on the outside, it's true, and Keneally has got a two-for-two baby in here by Constitution. Mm-hmm. This is a good group, and that winner of Lucas's, that American Butterfly, debuted in what looked to be a sassy race, he was okay.
I hear he really likes him too. Yeah. He likes. You know.
All right, Jimmy. We appreciate the visit.
Okay.
Congratulations on the win yesterday. Good luck forward and going forward beyond the meet as well with some of these horses. We appreciate the visit.
Okay, thanks, guys. Appreciate it too.
All right, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap it up for the season. Stay tuned.
It's been home to some of the sport's biggest moments, monumental achievements, and extraordinary records. At Santa Anita, we'll set another before the first gate even opens, as the Breeders' Cup returns for a record 10th time. This November, the stars will shine, champions will be crowned, and when the unbelievable happens, you'll want to be there to see it. The Breeders' Cup World Championships.
Visit Rivers Casino and Resort, the Capital Region's only destination for live table game action and the hottest new slots paying out millions. And they're off. Horse betting is now at Rivers Casino and Resort with Capital off-track betting terminals and live tellers located just off the gaming floor at Van Slick's. Get in on all the action at Rivers Casino and Resort.
No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
All right, the party's over.
Turn out the lights.
Turn out the lights.
You can do the dandy Don.
Tomorrow I turn out the lights, though, because I have one more day in here. But as far as you and I, done for another season. It was fun. Missed you in the middle there, but a big beginning, a huge end.
Big finish.
Always fun.
We love doing this, and we hope everybody's had a great Saratoga season. They're all great. It's always tough to leave, but you know what? If it doesn't end, then you don't anticipate it as much as you do next summer.
All right, we'll wrap it up. We'll be looking for you on the radio side, obviously. A big fall. You'll be down at the Breeders' Cup and out at the Breeders' Cup and whatnot. I'll fire you up on phone on my show. We'll talk. I'll be on your show.
You're going to Woodbine.
We're up at Woodbine in a couple of weeks, so looking forward to that as well. And we'll wrap it up. Loose on the Lead for another season in the books. Steve Bick, Seth Merrow, stay tuned. Talking Horses is up next. And again, sweatshirt giveaway today while supplies last. Low roller contest, double promotion down to Clubhouse Racebook. And tomorrow I have that bankroll playing into the mandatory, the Empire 6. So keep all that in mind as well. Tomorrow morning back on at 9 a.m. Handicapper Support, 10 o'clock Racing Across America as we wrap up the meet officially. On Monday morning. As far as Loose on the Lead, we're wrapping it up right now. Good luck this afternoon.
From the backstretch at Saratoga, this is Loose on the Lead with Steve Bick and Seth Merrow. Loose on the Lead is sponsored by Thoroughgraph. Everything you need to win. Visit Thoroughgraph.com. The new Colonial Downs and the Virginia Equine Alliance. Hill and Dale. Home of perennial standouts, Curlin, Kitten's Joy, Midnight Luke, and emerging stallions, Violence, Fire, and Army Mule. Visit HillandaleFarms.com for consignments at the 2019 yearling sales. Case Supply, the kitchen and bath professionals across upstate New York, showrooms in Syracuse, Auburn, and Amsterdam. Make your dream kitchen and bath a reality. Visit CaseSupplyInc.com. And McMahon of Saratoga, standing breakout stallion central banker, number one in New York and among the nation's leading young sires. Visit McMahonThoroughbred.com.